Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome. It's Monday. It's beautifully we have beautiful stormy skies today. So I think today's topic is really, really appropriate. Whether you're an entrepreneur, a business leader, or an artist, everyone today works in a really competitive workforce, and it doesn't look like it's going to get any easier anytime soon. And when everyone demands bigger, better, faster, and cheaper, it's all too easy to get stuck in a rut or to feel so overwhelmed that we end up going through the motions at home and at work, just trying to get through another week. So today we're talking about getting stimulated. We'll explore five habits that can help release your creativity and inspire and expand innovative thinking. I'm talking today with Janine McGlade. She's business partners with Andrew Peck. They're both acclaimed authors and entrepreneurs in the field of creativity and innovation. They are the co-creators of, is it Novus Inc?
Yep, that's right, Novus Inc.
Novus Inc. Wasn't quite sure how to say that.
Yeah, most people don't. They hesitate.
Yeah, and it's a New York-based consulting and education firm. And through Novus Inc., they help other companies stimulate breakthrough ideas to help them grow. And together, Janine McGlade and Andrew Peck wrote the book we're talking about today. It's called Stimulated, Habits to Spark Your Creative Genius at Work. And we have Janine McGlade on the phone with us. Welcome.
Thank you, Vicki. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, I was just telling you before we came on, I just loved this book. I loved everything about it from
thank you.
The pictures and the content. It was a really nicely presented work.
Well, thank you so much.
Sure. And I wanted to, we told our listeners a little bit about what you do, but you start the book with a rainy October day, Dublin, Ireland, with a client you call David.
Mm.
And I wonder if you'd share with us, he was in a state that many of us find ourselves in. Tell us a little bit about David's state and why you were there.
Great question. Yeah, and it's funny because it's a rainy day here in New York as well, so we can certainly relate to that day in Dublin. You know, David was a good client and became a good friend of ours, and we were doing some work with his team to really kind of help them come up with some very different breakthrough ideas, and we were working on an innovation process with him and really had a very good time. But, you know, toward the middle of the project, we really noticed David's energy was waning, and he seemed very stressed, very stuck. He communicated to us that he just wasn't feeling like he could keep going. He just didn't feel like he had any creativity left. And this is something that was very different for David in terms of his behavior. And as we explored more and more with him what was going on, I mean, what we saw was something that we had seen before with other clients, is that he was just literally stuck in a rut. And he just doesn't feel at the time that he was coming up with the best ideas and didn't really have the energy. He had a lot of pressures, you know, personally at home as well as on the job. There were some organization changes, so some things that probably we can all relate to.
Mm.
So as we explored it a little bit, you know, we worked with him very closely on how do we get him out of this rut. And so a lot of the work actually that we talk about in the book, kind of that was a spark for us to start exploring that in other people, because what we did notice is that there were a lot of other Davids in the world that were feeling that way, and then there were another set of people who really were so inspired and so passionate about what they did and really had a lot of energy, and we wondered, well, what is it about those folks that really can keep it going when they've got the same demands that we all have, and some of us get really stuck in a rut, and they could keep it going. So we wanted to study that and then write about it.
How long did you spend studying that?
Well, you know, it's funny, that particular situation with David and Dublin was probably about 5 years ago. So that was probably the initial kind of conscious attempt to study it. But when we thought back about it, we've been actually studying people like this in our careers for over 20 years, because this is the kind of work that we've done with organization development and training and strategy and communication. So when we looked at all the experiences and as we started to interview people over the course of the last few years, we noticed that a lot of what we were learning was things that we had learned before.
Mm. Now, obviously, you wrote a whole book about this, but throughout the course of your study, did you come up with a one-liner that does make the difference between the person who retains that passion and the person who, loses their passion? Because I know people, and I've gone through it myself, where you just go through periods where you do feel in a slump, and it's like, I could not be creative to save my life right now.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the headline, there was two headlines. The positive headline was get stimulated. And the other headline that maybe was a little bit more of why you needed to get stimulated or more quote unquote negative was feeling very stuck. And those are the things that we kept hearing over and over and over again. I feel stuck. I can't come up with the ideas. Just like you said, Vicki, that feeling of there's no way I can do this and feeling like in a slump. So those were kind of the two things that we heard on either side of the coin.
Mm. Now, let's look a little at why creativity is so important. You have a quote in the book from Carolyn Mace, author of Invisible Acts of Power. Mm. And I'm just going to read that quote because she says that blocked creative expression is as detrimental to your well-being as a drug addiction. And I do believe that. I believe it's very harmful. But let's talk about what that means in the bigger context of your work and what you found.
Sure, yeah, and that's, one of the reasons we kind of blew up that quote, if you will, so it stood out, was because we thought it was pretty powerful, and we agree with you as well that it's pretty true. I mean, we feel very strongly that every person was born to create. That manifestation of the creation that they end up bringing to life may be very different from person to person, but that we all have that ability. And, unfortunately, as kids, unfortunately, as adults, it kind of gets knocked out of us. But as kids, we're all creative. There's probably not one kid, I can't imagine, I've never seen it, who just isn't, feeling really good about what they do in creative, the younger kids anyway. Mm. And for some reason, as we grow up, we grow out of that feeling that we actually have such wonderful creativity. And we don't quite know why that happens necessarily, because each case is different. But, I mean, not being able to express yourself creatively is a block. And if you keep that block going, it can harm you, we believe, and some of the research shows, not only, in terms of coming up with new ideas, but also in terms of your health. And that's why I think Carolyn Mace talks about it being like a drug addiction. You can't get out of that cycle, and it keeps you blocked from what you really, truly are made to do.
Yeah. So let's you say being creative is not about being Picasso. I mean, many of us aren't lucky enough to, just give up work and paint the masterpiece or write the next great screenplay.
Right.
But we have to get creative in our jobs. So and one of the starting point really for that is stimulus.
Right.
The catalyst that sparks creativity. So I wonder if we can talk a little bit about that and how we begin to draw inspiration from what you call fresh insights from the world around us.
Yeah, absolutely. That is where we feel it all starts. A lot of people can take classes on creativity and innovation and that kind of thing, depending on if it's for yourself or for an organization, and those are great things. However, we feel that creativity actually doesn't start with saying, hey, I just need to come up with some new ideas, or, not everybody feels that they can just kind of be thrown into a brainstorming meeting and generate wonderful ideas and possibilities. We feel that there's a pre-state, if you will, to creativity, and that pre-state to being creative is being exposed to stimulus. And stimulus can come in all sorts of forms. And we talk a little bit about, the whole fact that if you're out and about, if you're exploring, and as we talk later about some of the habits, we'll get into that more, but it's all about putting yourself into different situations or looking at the same situations differently with eyes wide open so that you can really have the ability to take it in and absorb the experience and then come up with what we call a spark moment to then launch into a creative idea or expression.
Yeah. One of my favorite books is Ray Bradbury's Zen in the Art of Writing. And he talks about the muse, but he said that what he thinks the muse is subconscious. And that if we haven't fed ourselves over the years, we haven't fed our muse, we basically are going to have nothing to write about or nothing to contribute in a creative manner. And he's obviously not talking about food. He's on about getting out there and living, just like you said.
Right.
And experiencing as many different things as possible. So let's just take a little look at a high level of the five habits, and then we can drill down more deeply into each one.
Okay, sure.
And you start with scouting.
Exactly, yes. Scouting, a very a fun habit, if you will, although they all are fun. And scouting is all about having your eyes wide open, which basically means that when you are going about your daily routine or if you are putting yourself into situations where you are truly observing what's going on and not evaluating or interpreting what is going on, that eventually you will get some sparks. You will get some clues as to whatever it is maybe that you have in terms of a creative challenge or if you're in a work transition or what have you. So we talk all about going out into the world and looking for clues, literally describing what it is you see, what it is you hear, maybe what it is that you read, but not interpreting that. We have a tendency to interpret things. Without just kind of saying, well, here's just the facts. Here's just what I saw.
Okay. And cultivating is the second habit, the habit of growing, developing the spaces and places in which we find creativity. Why
right.
is that? I really believe in environment being a crucial part, but I know other people who can work anywhere and come up with great ideas. What do you think the difference is there?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think that maybe some people just are looking at things all the time with their eyes wide open, like we talked about in scouting. There are people who are perpetual scouts, so they find themselves in that no matter what environment they are in, they're constantly looking at things and ideas pop for them because they are truly stimulated. And chances are those people spend time either reading different magazines or going to cafes or taking a walk in the park or doing things, going to different spaces and places so that they can perpetually come up with those ideas. And it may look kind of random to us, or it may look like, oh my God, they're always coming up with some great ideas and how come I can't do that? But chances are they're doing something that allows them to have that stimulus so that they can have those ideas.
Okay. And the third one is called playing.
Right.
Kind of speaks for itself, so we'll come back visit that. And then,
okay, sure.
And then venturing is the essential habit, you say, of encouraging our hearts as well as our minds. Just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's, you know, venturing is all about taking those risks and making the leap, we call it. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, our heart wants to do something. How many times have we come, some of us have come up with many ideas, but we don't go ahead and make that leap because our head ends up getting in the way and saying, oh, no, that won't work, or, you know, they won't let me, or she won't let me, he won't let me, you know, whatever it might be. And so we've got to sometimes go with our heart or with our gut and let ourselves just kind of venture into the unknown, sometimes a little bit scary territory, so that we can reap some really great results.
Okay, and then the last habit is harvesting, and that's turning our ideas into something that is of real value to ourselves and to others.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Zulu word for that. I think it was it Zulu?
In terms of the Mbezu groups.
Say that again.
The Mbezu groups.
Mbezu
we talk a little
groups.
Bit about that as a process to really kind of have people come together and share their stories and share their celebrations. And a lot of times, harvesting is all about celebrating those successes and finding rituals and ways in which to really continue to perpetuate the whole idea that it's a good thing to come up with ideas, it's a good thing to take those risks and make it real, if you will. So we have this a little gathering that we do that's a Zulu phrase, Mbezu, and literally that's what they do over there with their government processes, and they invite the community together to just discuss issues and talk. So we kind of use it a little bit differently in a creativity context.
Okay, and you have loads of great quotes in the book, but I also left this one by, and this was by Picasso, and he said, inspiration does exist, but it must find you working.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah, and you talk about the cycle of creative genius, and you say that creative genius is not linear, it's
mm-hmm.
cyclical, it's without distinct or repetitive pattern.
Right.
And so let's talk a little bit about that cycle of creative genius.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, you're exactly right. It's not a cycle that happens where, okay, I'm going to scout today, tomorrow I'm going to go out and cultivate, next Thursday I'm going to play, you know, and then I'm going to check it off my list as if I've done it all, and I'm, you know, kind of wait for the magic moment to happen. It's not quite like that. As we go in and very consciously make these habits part of our lifestyle, part of our routine on a regular basis, what we find is that they each build on one another. For example, if I want to go scout, Well, I might decide, especially if it's in relationship to something that is work-related, for example, if I want to go study my consumers, or I want to study how people use products, or how they read books, or what they do in bookstores, or whatever it might be that I'm trying to look for, I might go and observe them in a very natural, normal place. But if I always do scouting in that same place, well, I'm probably going to come up with the same ideas. And not that that's bad, but what you want to do is shake that up a little bit and then go to a different space and place. So you can see where scouting and cultivating then kind of go hand in hand. So it really is very cyclical in terms of, you know, of a model, if you will, as opposed to, okay, I did the scouting, I'm done. Now let me just go sit in the park and think. It doesn't quite work like that. It has to be kind of a comprehensive picture, if you will.
Right. What are some of your favorite places where you go scouting?
Ooh, that's a great. I love. Well, I'm in New York, so I get to go into the city fairly often, and that, of course, because there's so many people. Sometimes I will just sit at a local cafe, and a lot of times in New York they just have the kind of bar seating, and you're right at a window, and you have nothing to do but to look at people going by. So that is a great place to kind of observe people's behavior, how they communicate to one another. I also love going into bookstores for a lot of reasons. I obviously love to buy books and magazines, but also, again, to observe people. We've done this with organizations where we've gone to cattle farms. We've observed smokers. We've observed, you know, bus stops and things like that. So we've done a lot of different observations and have had so much fun and have learned so much at each of them that it always sparks something for us and for our clients.
Sounds good. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Janine McGlade. She's one of the co-authors of Stimulated. Be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
John Harlan III promised his mother he'd never be an alpine climber. Join us next week to learn why he broke his promise and how his journey led to the expedition of a lifetime when he discusses the Eiger obsession, facing the mountain that killed my father. Also coming in this hour, Aaron Gruhl, founder of the Freedom Riders Foundation, whose inspirational story of courage and strength became the foundation for a Hollywood movie. Tune in next Monday at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And for more information, see conversationslive.net.
Alternative to what? Alternative to everything else out there on the radio. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My guest today is Janine McGlade. Together with Andrew Peck, she wrote the book called Stimulated, Habits to Spark Your Creative Genius at Work. And, you know, in today's competitive workforce, it's more important than ever, I think, to be creative and get ourselves out of that stuck feeling if that's how we're feeling. You have a great story in the book. We were talking about getting stimulated and where we draw stimulus from before the break. And I love this story about Bill Bowerman, who sat down to breakfast with his wife one day, and I'll let you continue that story.
Yeah, that is... That's one of our favorites, too. I mean, as the story goes, you know, Bill Bowerman was always, he was a track and field coach out in Oregon, and he really was always very interested in the performance of his athletes. So from anything from the clothes they wore to the shoes they wore to the food they ate, so he was very, this was kind of his muse, if you will. He was always thinking about it. And, you know, one day he was sitting down for breakfast with his wife, and his wife was making waffles, and as the waffles were coming out of the waffle iron, he had his spark moment. It was right then and there that he said, well, wow, what if I could make the sole of a shoe something like a waffle so that it would give the runners better performance? And that was a spark moment. And then, of course, he started pouring rubber into his wife's waffle iron, which I'm sure she loved. And of course, the rest is history, because now the company that he and a former student had founded together was Nike. And as you know, a very well-known and successful company. And it really started with him being always kind of looking and searching for the answers to his questions around better performance. And then one moment seeing that, it sparked it for him.
Brilliant.
It's cool.
Yeah, I was talking with a colleague about stimulus and, you know, how this group of people I was talking with, how they find stimulus. And a couple of them came back with, you know what, I have so much sensory overload, I just want to veg out when I have my time off. But isn't there a difference between positive stimulus and negative stimulus?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I think it's okay sometimes if we're feeling overloaded, it's okay to, quote unquote, veg out or meditate. I mean, you know, if you're really trying to solve for something or you're really trying to come up with new ideas, sometimes the best thing to do is to be in a quiet space or place. Sometimes the best thing to do is to meditate on it. One of the things that we tell people to do is take naps. And as much as it's not encouraged at work, certainly, if there's any way you can sneak it in without getting in trouble, we think this is a great thing, because and no more than like 15 to 20 minutes, because what happens is your brain gets into an alpha state. And in that alpha state, when you wake up, many times you have some different ideas and you're fresh to think of what you've been working on. So it's a really important kind of tool to use. In fact, Edison was known to take a nap in his chair sitting upright with a ball in his hand. And every time he would start to fall into sleep, he would drop the ball, which would wake him up, and 9 times out of 10, he would have a new idea or a way to solve a problem he was working on. So it kind of goes to show that maybe we can be Edison-like and take a little nap or get ourselves into a meditative frame of mind so that we can come up with new ideas.
Yeah, definitely. I know a very well-known Hollywood screenwriter, and he takes naps every day from 2 till 3, but he calls it
wow.
His dirty little secret, so I won't share his name.
You won't mention who it is, right?
he just says he's checking email or whatever.
Right. I love that. That's great. Good for him, because, you know what, maybe that's why he's a famous Hollywood guy, because
really?
He's doing these things and coming up with some great ideas.
Right.
I have a friend, actually, too, who is a math whiz, and she said in graduate school she was a math major, and she would go to bed at night, and she was trying to solve a problem. She would put the problem by her bedside. She would go to sleep. In the morning, she would wake up, and she'd solve the problem. Amazing. I mean, I couldn't do that
amazing.
If I had 20 hours of sleep. But
no, I think our subconscious is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
A lot of the workforce has changed so much over the last 10 years. I mean, it's changing every year, but I think specifically over the last 10 years, it's dramatically
sure.
changed. And people are required, you know, it used to be they were an expert in something, and now they have to be jack of all trades in everything. And oftentimes, people who used to have a corner office are now stuck in a cubicle.
Sure.
How do we keep creativity alive in what I think is such a deadening kind of environment?
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately, and I agree with you, probably the last 10 years you've seen even more of that with, you know, and recently with our economic, you know, kind of slump that we're
right.
in, you know, layoffs or just people not hiring because they don't want to take on the added expense and all of that. So, yeah, it's a difficult thing. I think it really, though, is about your own perspective. Now, certainly if your manager or a senior leader is encouraging you to do these things, these habits on a more daily basis, or encouraging you to get out and about, it helps. But sometimes we just have to kind of take that responsibility ourselves and try to change the way we do things, even if it's, you know, only can influence ourselves and not many other people. I mean, even being squished in a cubicle, for example, you know, maybe you don't have to always do your work in the cubicle. If there's a project that you have that's critical in terms of your thinking and your time, maybe you can go to a different space within the office, even the cafeteria. Maybe there's some, you know, light, natural light or something that'll just inspire you. Maybe on a nice day you can go outside and sit and just get a few moments. So sometimes even if we've got some constraints, we have to be a little extra creative maybe, but we can certainly find different ways of trying to get out of that slump and taking the time. And sometimes when you feel like you just don't have the time, that's probably exactly when you need to make the time to do it so that you can get more, you know, fresh ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember once I was working on a project and we were told, we all received telephone calls about 10 o'clock at night, you know, be at the studio at 7 a.m. sharp and wear something warm. And warm and comfortable is what we were told. And so we get down there and the director's like, okay, we're going snowboarding. By the time we finish today, I want everyone to come up with some brilliant ideas.
Oh, that's great.
And it was actually, even though we had to work on the Saturday to make up for that, it was amazing the ideas people did come up with during that time.
Oh, I believe it. I mean, first of all, you were having fun, you know, and you suspended it. Sometimes we have to suspend ourselves from thinking about the very thing we want to solve for. So I think that's a perfect example of the way, and good for him,
yeah, really,
to have encouraged that, you know, on a kind of a team basis, because that would be so wonderful if we could see more of that, because I really do feel like people would get better results if they just took that time away, because sometimes you just think too much about something and you don't, and you get stuck there.
Yes, definitely. You have to step away from it.
That's great.
Let's go a little deeper into some of the habits now. And scouting was the first one. And I wonder, based on your research, how we can create more of the spark moments you talk about, how we can increase our attraction ratio.
Yeah, that's a good question, because, you know, even telling stories like the Bill Bowerman and things, people will say, oh, you know, but that was just random. You know, that just kind of happened. Or, you know, my spark moments come when I'm in the shower. There's really no rhyme or reason as to why. And that might be true when you're not consciously putting into practice the habits in general, but certainly in scouting. And that's why scouting is so important, because scouting is one of the habits that will certainly give you a better hit ratio, if you will. Because if you have your eyes wide open and you are truly observing and absorbing, and we call that observating, we kind of coined a little bit of a word there, observating, really observing and absorbing the situation, you will experience it different than if you go through it, you know, just unconsciously. I mean, think about our traffic lights, for example. You know, we all know what a red light means. And our brain is a wonderful tool that every time we see a red light, we don't have to go through and process, well, gee, what does that mean? Do I have to step on my brakes while I'm driving my car? Do I keep going? Do I accelerate? We know that it means to stop. So our brain is a very powerful and helpful tool. However, that same thing happens most of the time with other things that we've encountered before. So our brain starts to make assumptions based on our experiences and then kind of takes us away from being able to look at those experiences more objectively. And if you just can look at those experiences more objectively, then you'll be able to, in the scouting world, really observe and absorb things that you may not have seen before, but maybe were always right in front of you.
Okay, and then talking of objectivity, you talk about describing versus interpreting when we're in that scouting stage, and
right.
You say being descriptive is saying something like she's tapping her cigarette box on the table, and
right.
Your interpretation of that is she's nervous.
Right.
So go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say exactly, that's exactly right.
So when we're looking at things objectively, we want to be in that descriptive versus interpretive state, right? Which is hard
exactly.
to do.
But yeah, I know, not always easy to do. And maybe for the red lights, we want to go ahead and be in that interpretive state and just assume it means to stop.
But, yes,
but absolutely, you know, because what we do and what we encourage people to do is literally get yourself a journal or a little pad of paper. And if you're going out in the world because you want to find the next best solution for your customers, and that's kind of the problem you have in your mind, and you go out and you literally don't interpret, you want to look with those eyes wide open and only describe what it is you see, what it is you hear, or what it is that you read, and really truly step back from it. What you want to do is have a place and time, though, after that, maybe after you've done several different rounds of observation, is to then look and see what patterns might form within the data that you've collected. We call them clues, because we don't know what it means yet, the fact that she tapped the cigarette box three times, but we do know that she did it, and then we saw somebody else do it, and then we read an article about how many smokers tap their cigarette box. So now we're looking at all this collective data, and we're starting to see patterns in that data, and that's when we can start to make some interpretations about what it might mean in relationship to our bigger challenge or question.
Now, once I have a spark, once I have an idea formulating, how do I know if that spark is worth committing to?
It's kind of like falling in love, you know. many times in our seminars and our presentations, we say, how many of you have fallen in love? And with a big groan, everybody says, well, it was too long ago. And we joke about it. But it's kind of like that, you know. I mean, we're attracted to many different people over the course of our lives. And some of those people end up being people we commit to. And some of those we end up not committing to. And so a spark is kind of like that. And many times, you know, we might get many, many ideas or a flash of an idea or an insight and say, that's great. Well, part of it is that we have to have some kind of selection criteria, if you will. I mean, just as if you're going out on a date, you know, there might be some, you know, specific criteria. You want somebody that's got a job or, you know, somebody that is independent or whatever those criteria are, so that when you do meet that person or if you meet that spark, you can then kind of evaluate at that point what it is that will work for you. You know, so a lot of times we tell people, well, first have a goal and objective in mind. What are you really trying to do? What are you really trying to get stimulus for? What's the question that you're looking for answers to? So start there, because then you might have lots of great ideas, but you might not want to go with every single one of them.
Mm. And, you know, some listeners might be thinking, well, this is great, but I don't have time. And you do talk, you do address time management in the book.
Yes.
But you say it's not about managing your time, it's about managing your energy.
Mm-hmm. So exactly.
I wonder if you'd just share a little insight on that.
Oh, yeah, sure,
us.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we all have the same number of hours in every day, and we all have the same number of minutes within those hours. And unfortunately, many of us say, oh, God, if I could just have more time, I'd get so much more done, or I'd at least sleep so I had some energy. But it really is about managing our energy around what it is that we're doing, because we're never, ever, ever going to get, as much as we hope and pray, that we're never going to get any more time in that day. And a lot of times, if we really stop and observe ourselves, do a little scouting on our own behavior, what we'll notice is sometimes we talk to ourselves and make ourselves crazy about tasks. So, for example, in the emails popping in to over 200 emails, you know, a day, and the phone is ringing off the hook and your boss is coming in and saying, I've got three new projects I need you to work on right now. Instead of saying, oh, God, how am I going to get all this done? You know, I never get a chance to do this. Oh, my boss, he doesn't understand me. Oh, when are these emails going to stop? Well, let me answer this one first. And, you know, you're talking to yourself constantly throughout the day. And sometimes if we're aware that that talk is actually very, very negative, that's part of managing our energy. You know, sometimes it's just a matter of literally taking a deep breath, saying, okay, what's the best use of my time right now? Where can I manage my energy? What should I be focused on? Or maybe it's literally getting up and walking away for a little while, getting a fresh perspective. Where do I need to come back and focus? But a lot of times we get ourselves a little bit crazy because that constant chatter that keeps us distracted, and then we end up wasting that precious energy.
Mm. I know I've become very conscious about environment. Since reading the book, I've paid particular attention to it because that's your second habit, is cultivating
right.
your environment. And I'm somebody who does work a lot in coffee shops because I go crazy if I'm by myself all day
right.
working.
you need that energy.
Yes, you need that energy. And that's what I've found with different places. There are some that definitely spark. There's one coffee shop I can think of where a lot of students hang out and the music's really good. And
I
like to go there when I need to get some extra creative spark, where I might choose to go somewhere else if I'm already deeper into something and I need to think a little bit more clearly.
Right.
So what are some ways that we can make sure our own workspace, you know, is working for us?
Well, that's a good, yeah, it's a good question. Sometimes, you know, we don't have the luxury to always go out and about, but certainly any time that we can get away from where we typically work, it's a good thing. But you talk about the physical space is like a different coffee shop, but there's also that kind of metaphysical aspect to it that you also mentioned, which was kind of the music and the vibe that's going on around you. So it's really important to kind of tune into, first of all, what is it that you need? You know, some people have to have complete silence when they're working on a task. Others really need to have noise that they can block out around them to work on a task. So, and like you said, even just depending on what you're working on or what stage you're in, you've got a different coffee shop that you would go to just to be able to kind of tap into that energy. So it's really important for us just to know what it is you need, and then to make sure that you make a conscious effort to go and try different places out to see if that's what you get. And it may take a few times to try some different things, but eventually you'll find something that'll work for you.
Mm. So many companies are downsizing. I was listening to the radio this morning about more layoffs across the U.S. and, of course, with today's economy. We're asked to wear so many different hats.
Right.
And I kind of touched on that a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But when your workload is so full already, how do you get that competitive edge? Because we do need that. I actually was listening to a commentator this morning, and he said that many people, when they think their jobs are in jeopardy, tend to fly low under the radar, but that is not that's not really the answer. You need to get creative.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think having, you know, the ability to kind of rise above some of those challenges, this is probably the most critical time to do that, for job security or just for your own, you know, sanity's sake, just to be able to kind of make it through some of the tough times. I think being creative now, and we kind of talk about in the book, it's not about a luxury anymore. It's not just kind of a nice to have. It's not because we're, you know, this is a survival skill. This is something that's going to keep us going. It's going to keep us valuable to our employers. It's going to keep us, and by the way, even if it doesn't keep us valuable to our employers because we're still going to get laid off, guess what? It'll get us the next job, or at least it'll keep us going through the transition period as well to figure out, well, what is it that I really want to do? So absolutely, sometimes during the hardest times is the most important time to be creative and to keep your juice flowing.
Right, right. And that kind of leads us into turning work into play. And I know that your partner, Andrew Peck, doesn't like the word job.
That's right.
So how do we cope with meetings that run long, when people take themselves too seriously, when things get tense at work? How can we get creative to lighten things up there? How can we play more at work?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and you're right. Stand the word job. Job is just kind of a enslavement, you know. It kind of just brings you down. And really, in meetings, for example, that's a great place where we can bring energy. And usually those are the most typical places where we have the least amount of energy. You know, people sit around the room, and we always joke about that. Sometimes we've gone into conference rooms where, you know, the portraits of the bygone leaders have more life in them than do the participants in the meeting. And it's kind of sad because they're just kind of going through their updates, and you know, Amy goes first, David goes next, and then Charlie intervenes with a question. You know, it's like almost predictable. And sometimes just shaking that up can be as simple as bring in some toys, bring in some Play-Doh, bring in some balls. Maybe change the way that you do the order of your status update meetings. You know, the next person who gets the ball, they get to go. Part of what happens, I think, in business is that we take ourselves so seriously, you know, and all of a sudden we've got to be serious because we've got to show how smart we are. Well, you know what? We are smart, and we've got something to contribute. That's why we're there to begin with. And sometimes, and it doesn't mean, by the way, that we don't take our work seriously and that business is not a serious endeavor. Of course it is. But we don't want to have to take ourselves so seriously. I mean, there's been some research that shows that, you know, the more fun we have, the more productive we can be, and the better ideas we're going to come up with. So why wouldn't we want to have a little bit more fun? I mean, first of all, it's just more fun. And second of all, you might actually come up with some better ideas than you would have otherwise.
I agree with that. I actually used to go to the joke shop regularly when I worked in one kind of environment that was very stressful. And I found this brilliant chuckle box. And every time things got too serious and people started getting tense, I'd play my little chuckle box and it cracked everybody up.
That is
stupid
great.
Stupid as it sounds, it worked.
Right, but hey, anything. You know, we do a fun activity that your listeners might be interested in. We do, we literally get bubble wrap. And what we'll do is maybe in the middle of a meeting when the energy is waning, we lay out the bubble wrap and we put on some music. And we say on the count of three, when this music goes on, we want everybody to jump on the bubbles and pop as many as they possibly can. Because you know you can't resist popping those bubbles, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has such a great time. They break up the monotony of what they're doing in the moment, and they actually get a chance to have a little bit of fun. And it really kind of spurs the energy back, and people have fun.
Yeah, and I actually saw them doing that on the video on your website, and it looked great.
Oh, yeah.
We need to take a break. So we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes. We're talking with Janine McGlade, and you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Hi, this is Howard Bono, the host of The Money Thing, heard right here on Tuesdays at noon. You don't need to know everything about money, but there are some things you really should know. Each week, my co-host Gary Mance and I will bring you the information that you need. We cut through all the verbiage and marketing hype to provide you with an hour of condensed, easy-to-understand information. We want to improve the quality of your life by taking the financial stress away. So join us for The Money Thing, Tuesdays at noon, here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Proud to bring variety to your radio dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest today is Janine McGlade. Together with her business partner, Andrew Peck, she wrote the book called Stimulated: Habits to Spark Your Creative Genius at Work. I wonder if you'd give out your website, Janine, before I forget, and we'll try and do that one more time before the end of the show.
Okay, yeah, great. Thank you. It's www.novesinc.com.
Okay, and you can find out more about your company and about the book right on that website. So one of the things, you know, if you're a boss or, you know, we've talked about being an employee, but what if you're a boss and you can't get motivated? And obviously it's your job to get the team motivated, and they definitely pick up on key signals. How do we fake it if we can't quite make it right now?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we certainly have that situation. That was our David from Dublin example. I mean, he was a manager of a team. He was feeling pretty flat, and obviously his flatness is going to impact the rest of his team, and it did. But, you know, one of the things that we have to keep in mind that we do have that responsibility. That's why we're put in that role, not to add any more pressure, but you know what? We have to also then go out and get stimulated. We have to go out and get stimulus. So if we start to do the things that will help us, we will see a direct relationship to helping our team as well. So we have to start with ourselves, whether we're a boss, and you know, manager, team leader, or an individual contributor, and that will help perpetuate that the fact that it's really important for us to do this.
Mm. Let's look at habit number four. It's called venturing. You say, be brave, take chances, jump into opportunities.
That's right. Well, you know, this is where we commit to that spark that we had. This is all about making that leap. And this is probably the scariest part of the process, because we don't necessarily know yet if we're going to have a quote-unquote success or a quote-unquote failure, and yet we have to take that chance. You know, many of the great innovations in the world would never have been had somebody not taken that chance and taken that leap. So venturing is all about doing that. You know, one of the things that can be so difficult, though, about venturing is, we kind of mentioned this before, you know, our own negative self-talk, but also in meetings and things like that, a lot of times people will, or in organizations, will kind of use killer phrases. We talk a lot about that, oh, that'll never work, or they won't let me do it. You know, those are the things that we have to try to teach each other within a business, that when people are getting ready to venture and take their ideas, that we want to try to support those ideas and build on those ideas and maybe help them even get to have a better idea. And that's what venturing is all about.
And when we have a big idea, you always say commit to a big, bold idea, because most of us are not bold enough.
Right. Yeah, we do. You know, big, bold ideas are, you know, especially in business, you know, a lot of times our competitors are thinking about, noodling on, and exploring and getting research data on the same stuff that we're getting. So what we really want to do, and part of what these habits help us to do, is to go into different places and spaces, different areas where our competitors probably are not going. And this will help us come up with what is a very big, very bold idea that may change the way the game is played within our industry, or if it's for our own personal self, will change the way we live our lives. So we've got to commit to big, bold things. Now, creativity and innovation wouldn't be innovative or creative if it wasn't something that might scare us just a little bit and be something that we think, my God, how would we possibly attain that? So if it doesn't make you a little nervous, it's probably not a big enough or bold enough goal or innovation, if you will. And so you really want to think big. You can always reel yourself in later, but kind of keep the possibilities open initially, and then later on you can start to evaluate whether or not you want to go as bold or as big as you started out with.
Do you think that that's sometimes why people run out of steam? They have this great idea and they you know, are all gung-ho, and then gradually they kind of peter out. Do you think it's because the big idea is not big enough? It's not challenging enough for them?
It very well may be, yeah. I think we find that a lot, that some people just, you know, they kind of lose interest in it because maybe it didn't challenge them, or maybe they already, you know, maybe it was just so easy that they were able to do it, and now they're like, okay, now what? You know, and then they're not as motivated. And, I mean, some people can then build on that and come up with some more and more ideas, but sometimes I think you're right. I think that that could be exactly why.
You talk a lot about the importance of having a collaborative partner or team to work with. What if somebody doesn't have anyone that in their close vicinity who's interested in talking about their creative ideas?
Yeah, that's true. That's hard. You know, I think there's probably somebody out there that everybody could tap into. I mean, I would imagine that there's something that you can find somebody either in your family or a coworker, or maybe what you want to do is start a blog. We're going to be starting a blog, actually, as a matter of fact, that might be able to help people that don't really have anybody. But sometimes we have to think outside of our quick little circle of who we interact with every day and think of other ways. You know, who's to say you can't walk up to, if you're in Starbucks or one of the local coffee shops and say, excuse me, can I ask you a question? I'm working on this problem. Do you have like 5 minutes? It's amazing. People are basically friendly, you know, and I think people do genuinely want to help. And you know, who's to say you can't ask a stranger for some help too, if there's something that you want to kind of brainstorm and see if somebody else thinks the idea is good. But most of us, if we think really expansively, we could probably find that one person that might be willing to listen to our ideas and kind of help us.
Very true, very true. Let's look at harvesting. You'd say harvesting is the consequences of creative efforts and ritualistic and celebrating effort at sustaining creative genius. It's quite a mouthful there, but how do we put all this together, and then how do we sustain? I think that's the key thing.
Yeah.
Once we've gone this far, is how do we sustain our creative genius?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously that's probably the most critical thing, because, you know, we can do all this and then we can still get into a rut if we don't continue to kind of push ourselves, if you will. You know, I mean, the venturing is all about making things real, getting whatever that spark was and making that manifest itself. You know, you want to get rid of your doubt. You don't want to worry about the opinions of others. You want to trust your intuition at this point. And you also want to celebrate. You know, Edison came up with many, many ways to not create a light bulb. You know, he really failed, quote unquote, many, many times. But you know what? He saw it differently. He chose to look at things differently. He said, that's great ways not to make it. And then, of course, eventually he succeeded. So, you know, thinking of those things and those what we call so-called failures and celebrating it, that it actually helps us get that much closer to what we ultimately want. So very, very important. So venturing is all about making it real and celebrating those successes. We don't celebrate enough in organizations. We don't have enough rituals. We don't have enough things, even personally, usually, to really, you know, kind of get us excited about what we're doing in our lives and what we want to kind of be passionate about. And so it's so important to be intentional about that, both for ourselves as well as within organizations, to kind of help perpetuate and keep the ideas coming and harvesting so that the cycle continues.
Yeah, and we're feeding positive, we're giving ourselves positive feedback then, instead of focusing on what we didn't manage to achieve.
Exactly. I mean, if we take a positive approach, we're going to be so much better off and not be smacking ourselves over the head for what we did wrong, because that doesn't motivate anybody.
Yeah. So, and you do say creative genius is about conditioning. So I assume you mean just practicing.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like an exercise program. You know, if you really want to get in shape, you're going to be disciplined about doing what you need to do to get there. And it's not just exercising, but it's eating right, and it's, you know, doing all these different things. So it's the same thing with this. It's all about conditioning yourself. You know, habits are hard to break. Habits can be difficult to make. But if you give yourself time, and statistics show that it takes 21 days to make a habit or break a habit for that matter, that if you give yourself about 3 weeks and you're constantly doing something to push that forward, it will then become truly a habit that you start not to even think about. It just becomes part of who you are and how you operate.
Mm. Now, despite all the wonderful work you've poured into this book, I'm sure you've had times in your life when you felt less than creative. Can you give us an example and how you turned that around?
Ooh, that's a great... just this morning, I have to admit, we have been having a wonderful time on tour, and we have wonderful clients that we support, but sometimes everything converges at once, like we talked about, and Andrew and I were brainstorming a session that we are giving in the next couple of days, and we were, like, really stuck. We were having such a hard time, and when we stopped for a minute, we started laughing, because we said, we're so stuck. We got to stop talking about this right now. I mean, we had some noise going on. There was other people doing something down the hallway. And so literally what we did was we said, okay, we're going to take a 15-minute break, even though we didn't really have the time, but we said we got to take a 15-minute break. We each went into our offices. Within minutes, he called me back. He says, I got it.
Amazing.
So it happens to us as well, and we have to also, you know, kind of practice what we preach and change, shake things up a little bit.
Right. What does passion mean to you, Janine?
That's a great question. Passion for me means doing something you love. It's flow. It's when you could keep doing that particular thing over and over again and not get tired of it, and you get energy from doing it. It's joy. It's pure joy.
And you talk in the book about passion and practicality, that you need your head and your heart together to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our head is all about the logic and the analytical and how we think through and make decisions. Obviously very important in our lives and very important in business. Our heart is this thing that perhaps is the passion and some of the drive to kind of want to do something different. Or maybe that's where we also feel the stuckness, where we're saying we're just not feeling great. So you truly need both your head and your heart. And you want to lead with your heart to find out what it is you're passionate about, what it is that'll bring you energy, what it is that'll get you stimulated. And then you need your head to really put into practice and to make it real how you will actually get there.
And what's the one thing you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
Ooh, well, I hope that everybody can find that thing that will make them feel passionate. I hope that they can find real joy in what they do every day, whether they're in a transition, whether a mom, stay at home, whether they're the CEO or an artist, like you said before. Just having everybody, I hope, can really find their thing that gets them up in the morning in a happy and joyful way.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for being with us today. I thoroughly enjoyed the book and enjoyed talking with you.
Oh, thank you so much, Vicki.
Yeah, let's go ahead and give out your website again, please.
Okay, great. It is www.novesinc, that's N-O-V-E-S-I-N-C, novesinc.com. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
You're welcome. And you mentioned earlier, you mentioned in the book, actually, Twyla Tharp and her book, The Creative Habit, and that's one of my favorite books, and your book is going to go right next to that on my shelf now. That's how much I enjoyed it. I thought
so
it was fantastic.
Oh, thank you. We really appreciate that. We're
sure.
Glad you enjoyed it.
Sure. And, of course, my guest, thank you, was Janine McGlade. I'm having a little brain cramp there. My guest was Janine McGlade, her partner and co-author, Andrew Peck, and the book they wrote, Stimulated, Habits to Spark Your Creative Genius at Work. And I want to thank each of you for joining me today. Appreciate you being with us. And if you want to check out the website, you can find more information at conversationslive.net. We do have podcasts of featured shows up there. And sometime today, we'll be putting this podcast up there. So if you want to listen to it again, you can. And that's at conversationslive.net. And if you have any questions or feedback on today's show, you can reach me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. Please join us next Monday at noon. Until then, live well, live strong. And thank you for spending this hour with us on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
John Harlan III promised his mother he'd never be an alpine climber. Join us next week to learn why he broke his promise and how his journey led to the expedition of a lifetime when he discusses the Eiger obsession, facing the mountain that killed my father. Also coming in this hour, Aaron Gruhl, founder of the Freedom Riders Foundation, whose inspirational story of courage and strength became the foundation for a Hollywood movie. Tune in next Monday at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And for more information, see conversationslive.net.